Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast. Point of View.
Only on Kaya 959.
On the street.
On the air.
We are rhythm and beat.
Well, thank you so much for staying with us. So, I think earlier on I mentioned the fact that there is really a case that I, maybe it's going under the radar, but a bittersweet moment where you have the former apartheid police officer, Johan Marais, who's been sentenced to 15 years imprisonment by the Pretoria High Court today for the 1987 murder of student activist Kaifas Nyoka. Now, this case has seen two inquests. And eventually, you know, they didn't go very far because it was found that the police had acted in self-defense. However, this Johan Marais at some point decided to, you know what, he can't do this anymore. He wants to speak up. And he did, and volunteered information to NPA to say, well, you know, I want to tell you what happened. And he has. This is how we find ourselves here. So I do want to bring into the conversation Jos Venter, who is the legal representative of the Nyoka family. Thank you very much, Mr. Venter, for your time. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Pamela. Thanks for having me.
Gosh, what a case this is, and I think it's a landmark case in many ways. It's interesting because Mr. Marais only kind of opened up in, 2019 and said, well, I want to speak up. Am I correct in saying it was 2019?
Yeah, 2019 he came forward, but I think the historical context of this matter is important. Mm. So Kaifas Nyoka was killed on the 24th of August, 1987. A police operation was executed at the house of his parents where he stayed in Daveyton, and there was a consignment of police officers from the municipal police from Daveyton, the Benoni security branch, as well as the East Rand Reaction Unit. So it was a large consignment of police officers that went to the house, entered Kaifas's room, removed three of Kaifas's friends from the room, left him inside with Johan Marais and Peter Stander, and he was shot 9 times. And about a year after that, in 1988, there was an inquest before the Benoni Magistrates Court. And Johan Marais, Peter Stander, and Abraham Hercules Engelbrecht, who were all police officers, Engelbrecht attached to the security branch, and Stander and Marais attached to the reaction unit. All three of them actually testified before the inquest court in 1988. So at that time, the family was confronted with three police officers who presented a version. And the version that they presented to the inquest court was a version of self-defense. So you could say Johan Marais came forward in 2019, but actually, you know, since 1988, the family was well aware who the police officers were that killed their brother. In 2019, Johan Marais confessed that they had lied in 1988 when they presented their version to the police. So that's the sort of the phenomenal aspect about this case is that he actually came forward and said that, you know, the version that they had presented decades before that was false, and that they had in fact murdered Kaifas in cold blood and executed him in his bed.
So if we take it even further back, this case, if I understand it correctly, had gone through the TRC process. But again, you know, fast forward to 1988 and 1989, where the four then had a version of the story, as you're saying, to say, well, you know, we were acting in self-defense. What I think is really interesting is that they were giving orders to go and find Kaifas, but the orders were to arrest him. Is it not right?
Yeah, so what we understand from both the inquest proceedings in 88 and from Johan Marais' guilty plea in the current case is that a operation was planned at Daveyton Police Station to arrest Kaifas at his house or his parents' house in Daveyton. In 88, the police officers said or confirmed that the operation was a planned arrest and that it had gone south when Kaifas you know, tried to attack them with a knife. What Johan Marais said in his guilty plea is that, in fact, he confirmed that the operation was a planned arrest, but that moments before he and Peter Stander and Engelbrecht went into Caiaphas's room, Engelbrecht, who was attached to the security branch and who led the operation, gave Marais an instruction to execute or to kill Caiaphas, to remove him, the moment that he's alone with him in the room. So that's where the instruction, according to Marais, changed, was the moment before they entered into the room.
In other words,
those are the two versions that we have on record.
In other words, the possible admission now of guilt and the guilty plea is presenting other facts, saying, well, maybe that didn't happen. The self-defense is not quite what happened. They made a decision before walking into the room to shoot and kill him.
Yeah, so one question actually remains, and Judge Masopa highlighted it in his judgment today, is if the operation was one to arrest, why was the consignment of police officers that went to the Nyoka home such a large consignment? Allegria Nyoka, who's the eldest sister, she testified in the trial of Marais' three co-accused, testified that when she peeped out the door on the morning of the 24th of August 1987, it seemed to her as if the army had descended on their yard, and there were police officers with very large firearms. So Judge Masopa questioned, in fact, whether the operation was in fact a planned as an arrest. And whether or not they actually planned to execute him when they convened at Davyton Police Station. So that's a question that we are hoping would, you know, potentially maybe be answered in the trial that's still ongoing in the Benoni Magistrates Court.
So we find ourselves here where the guilty plea has found, Johan Marais in the situation where he's been sentenced to 15 years. But I wonder how the family is feeling, because the other three are not playing ball like Marais did.
Yeah, so I do think it's important sort of to distinguish Marais from the other three accused based on the fact that he decided to plead guilty and the others decided to plead not guilty and to take not to take responsibility for their crimes or for their conduct. So Johan Marais' guilty plea and the conviction and the sentence, I think has definitely brought some comfort and closure to the family, but there is still a lot of questions that remain. And there is the three perpetrators or co-accused who are still on trial, who's actually fighting, to prove their innocence. We'll have to see how that trial turns out and what the outcome is there.
And I think for me, what stands out about that is, For the one Marais who decided, as I said, I think it was 2019, who decided he's now going to, come and confess what his version is, because he was willing, it was so quick. I mean, I know 2019 to 2025 is not short, but relatively speaking, it was short. There was a prosecution, and we find ourselves with some sort of closure. It may not be complete, but some sort of closure, whereas the others are dragging this all out. And, look what can happen when people just come up and tell the truth, or at least the truth in front of the judge, which will decide whether it is the truth or not.
Yeah, and one could say, that is what victims of apartheid crimes deserve, especially given that we are 30 years into our democracy. These crimes happened 30, 40 years ago. Caiaphas's parents both passed away. His father passed away in 1992, shortly after Caiaphas was killed. But his mother only passed away in 2010. So she had to live the remainder of her life, without answers and closure as a mother. And it's the same for other victims. We think about Nokutula Simelane, who disappeared in 1983 when her mother was 43 years old. She's 84 at the moment. And that trial has been ongoing. The charges were leveled against four former police officers in 2016. That trial hasn't started. Mrs. Simelane is 84 years old. the majority of her life she had to spend questioning what happened to her daughter, where's her daughter's body. Her daughter never returned from Swaziland in 1983. They also went to the TRC. They were confronted by the perpetrators. And here we are more than 40 years later without any answers. So I think it's deserving of, or victims deserve the closure. And the truth, unfortunately, lies in the hands of police officers and perpetrators. And Judge Masopa said as well in his judgment today, and I totally agree with it, you know, that perpetrators should come forward and give victims the justice that they deserve. There are ways where, you know, perpetrators can negotiate for sentences. The criminal procedure allows that. If they are cooperative with the state, they might even be indemnified from prosecution. They can enter into plea agreements with the state and, disclose the facts, give the victims the closure that they want, the truth that they want. And there might be a possibility that those perpetrators wouldn't even serve any jail time. The responsibility lies in the hands of the perpetrators. And I think, you know, it's what the country deserves. Our apartheid era is long not forgotten, and we can't close that chapter. And if the authorities don't work with speed, the effluxion of time is going to mean that the primary victims or secondary first line of victims will all pass away, be dead in a couple of years, and with that, the truth and justice goes to their graves with them.
And, you know, I think the contestation here for those who've been commenting on this is how genuine Murray is. And you made the point earlier that, look, he's come up and he's given us some information, or at least a lot. And there's contestation about the reasons he came up and said this. I know that the judge, Masopa, also sort of alluded to that, you know, questioning how genuine this motive was. I know that he had ideas of writing a book as well. And maybe he was hoping that being somebody who comes up with the truth, he may not go to prison. Have you spoken to him? Has he come forth? Has he spoken to the family?
Mr. Murray, he wrote a letter to the family in the beginning of January this year, after he was convicted. He wrote a letter to the family and he expressed his apologies and he asked for forgiveness. There has not been a meeting between himself and the family. That door is open to the family, or they've kept the door open to a potential meeting between themselves and Johan Murray sometime in the future. If Mr. Murray wants to apply for parole in after he served the two-thirds of his sentence, there would need to be victim-perpetrator dialogue. So there could potentially be room for something like that. But up to date, it has not happened. And it is something that just Judge Masopa criticized him for. But there could be many reasons for his decision not to engage with the families. But again, I think a lesson should be taken from that, national or dialogue and restorative justice. In my personal view, particularly in these types of cases, I think it's critical. And it can only assist with closure.
Does the family believe he told them everything there is to know?
No, they don't. They think that there are certain facts that he decided not to disclose, and that he protected some of his colleagues. So they still have questions, and that's what Allegria testified in during the sentencing proceedings. You know, she said that from the family's side, they are hopeful that Mr. Murray might decide. If there is room for him to do that, to testify against his co-accused, and the state has closed their case, in the other trial, but the law makes provision for a judge to call a witness in a criminal trial if it's in the interest of justice. So that might happen.
Yes, Fenta, thank you. Really, thank you for talking to us, and I suppose for taking on this case. I mean, look, I don't know what to say. I think our hearts and condolences again go to the Nyoka family. And it is 38 years later, and we are here. And I said, it's a bittersweet moment, I think, for them. And I think it's something to think about, really. Thank you for your time, and thank you for outlining it also succinctly for us. Thank you.
Thanks, Pamelo.
Yeah. So obviously, as I said, Yosventa is a legal representative of the Nyoka family. I'd really like to hear what your thoughts are on this one. 086-000-0959. Very keen also to hear your voice notes as well on 063-688-0959. We've spoken about this countless times. We have been asking, you know, why are we not seeing prosecutions of people who committed murder in apartheid times? And this is the very first in this country, and listen to the facts. You know, we have this prosecution because someone decided to at least come up and speak up and say, well, I was guilty, I want to speak up. The other cases, they're not. They're evading the law. They're not coming up with the truth. There are postponements upon postponements upon postponements. And it is almost 40 years. And families still do not have closure. I don't know.
Kaya Talk.
How much more?
On the street.
Information does anybody need?
On the air.
Click. Kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.